Homo Deus, A Brief History of Tomorrow. The Humanist Schism. So far, we have discussed humanism as if it were a single coherent worldview. In fact, humanism shared the fate of every successful religion, such as Christianity and Buddhism. As it spread and evolved, it fragmented into several conflicting sects. All humanist sects believe that human experience is the supreme source of authority and meaning, yet they interpret human experience in different ways. Humanism split into three main branches. The orthodox branch holds that each human being is a unique individual possessing a distinctive inner voice and a never-to-be-repeated string of experiences. Every human being is a singular ray of light which illuminates the world from a different perspective and which adds color, depth, and meaning to the universe. Hence, we ought to give as much freedom as possible to every individual to experience the world, follow his or her inner voice, and express his or her inner truth. Whether in politics, economics, or art, individual free will should have far more weight than state interests or religious doctrines. The more liberty individuals enjoy, the more beautiful, rich, and meaningful is the world. Due to this emphasis on liberty, the orthodox branch of humanism is known as liberal humanism, or simply as liberalism. It is liberal politics that believes the voter knows best. Liberal art holds that beauty is in the eye of the beholder. Liberal economics maintains that the customer is always right. Liberal ethics advises us that if it feels good, we should go ahead and do it. Liberal education teaches us to think for ourselves because we will find all the answers within us. During the 19th and 20th centuries, as humanism gained increasing social credibility and political power, it sprouted two different offshoots: socialist humanism, which encompassed a plethora of socialist and communist movements, and evolutionary humanism, whose most famous advocates were the Nazis. Both offshoots agreed with liberalism that human experience is the ultimate source of meaning and authority. Neither believed in any transcendental power or divine law book. If, for example, you asked Karl Marx what was wrong with 10-year-olds working 12-hour shifts in smoky factories, he would have answered that it made the kids feel bad. We should avoid exploitation, oppression, and inequality, not because God said so, but because they make people miserable. However, both socialists and evolutionary humanists pointed out that the liberal understanding of the human experience is flawed. Liberals think the human experience is an individual phenomenon, but there are many individuals in the world, and they often feel different things and have contradictory desires. If authority and meaning flows from individual experiences, how do you settle contradictions between different such experiences? On 17th July 2015, the German Chancellor Angela Merkel was confronted by a teenage Palestinian refugee girl from Lebanon whose family sought asylum in Germany but faced imminent deportation. The girl, Rim, told Merkel in fluent German that it's really very hard to watch how other people can enjoy life and you yourself cannot. I don't know what my future will bring. Merkel replied that politics can be tough and explained that there are hundreds of thousands of Palestinian refugees in Lebanon and Germany cannot absorb them all. Stunned by this no-nonsense reply, Rim burst out crying. Merkel proceeded to stroke the desperate girl on the back, but stuck to her guns. In the ensuing public storm, many accused Merkel of cold-hearted insensitivity. To assuage criticism, Merkel changed tack and Rahim and her family were given asylum. In the following months, Merkel opened the door even wider, welcoming hundreds of thousands of refugees to Germany. But you can't please everybody. Soon enough, she was under heavy attack for succumbing to sentimentalism and for not taking a sufficiently firm stand. Numerous German parents feared that Merkel's U-turn means their children will have a lower standard of living and perhaps suffer from a tidal wave of Islamization. Why should they risk their family's peace and prosperity for complete strangers who might not even believe in the values of liberalism? Everyone feels very strongly about this matter, how to settle the contradictions between the feelings of the desperate refugees and the anxious Germans. Liberals forever agonize about such contradictions. The best efforts of Locke, Jefferson, Mill, and their colleagues have failed to provide us with a fast and easy solution to such conundrums. Holding democratic elections will not help, because then the question will be, who would get to vote in these elections? only German citizens or also millions of Asians and Africans who want to immigrate to Germany? Why privilege the feelings of one group over another? Likewise, you cannot resolve the Arab-Israeli conflict by making 8 million Israeli citizens and 350 million citizens of Arab League nations vote on it. For obvious reasons, the Israelis will not feel committed to the outcome of such a plebiscite. People feel bound by democratic elections only when they share a basic bond with most other voters. If the experience of other voters is alien to me, and if I believe they do not understand my feelings and don't care about my vital interests, then even if I am outvoted by 100-1, I have absolutely no reason to accept the verdict. Democratic elections usually work only within populations that have some prior common bond, such as shared religious beliefs and national myths. They are a method to settle disagreements between people who already agree on the basics. Accordingly, in many cases, liberalism has fused with age-old collective identities and tribal feelings to form modern nationalism. Today, many associate nationalism with anti-liberal forces, but at least during the 19th century, nationalism was closely aligned with liberalism. Liberals celebrate the unique experiences of individual humans. Each human has distinctive feelings, tastes, and quirks, which he or she should be free to express and explore as long as they don't hurt anyone else. Similarly, 19th century nationalists such as Giuseppe Mazzini celebrated the uniqueness of individual nations. They emphasized that many human experiences are communal. You cannot dance the polka by yourself, and you cannot invent and preserve the German language by yourself. Using word dance, food and drink, each nation fosters different experiences in its members and develops its own peculiar sensitivities. Liberal nationalists like Mazzini sought to protect these distinctive national experiences from being oppressed and obliterated by intolerant empires and envisaged a peaceful community of nations, each free to express and explore its communal feelings without hurting its neighbors. This is still the official ideology of the European Union, whose constitution of 2004 states that Europe is united in diversity, and that the different peoples of Europe remain proud of their own national identities. The value of preserving the unique communal experiences of the German nation enables even liberal Germans to oppose opening the floodgates of immigration. Of course, the alliance with nationalism hardly solves all conundrums, while it created a host of new problems. How do you compare the value of communal experiences with that of individual experiences? Does preserving Polka, Bratwurst, and the German language justify leaving millions of refugees exposed to poverty and even death? And what happens when fundamental conflicts erupt within nations about the very definition of their identity, as happened in Germany in 1933, in the USA in 1861, in Spain in 1936, or in Egypt in 2011? In such cases, holding democratic elections is hardly a cure-all, because the opposing parties have no reason to respect the results. Lastly, as you dance the nationalist polka, a small but momentous step may take you from believing that your nation is different from all other nations to believing that your nation is better. 19th century liberal nationalism required the Habsburg and Tsarist empires to respect the unique experiences of Germans, Italians, Poles, and Slovenes. 20th century ultranationalism proceeded to wage wars of conquest and build concentration camps for people who dance to a different tune. Socialist humanism has taken a very different course. Socialists blame liberals for focusing our attention on our own feelings instead of on what other people experience. Yes, the human experience is the source of all meaning, but there are billions of people in the world, and all of them are just as valuable as I am. Whereas liberalism turns my gaze inwards, emphasizing my uniqueness and the uniqueness of my nation, socialism demands that I stop obsessing about me and my feelings, and instead focus on what others are feeling and about how my actions influence their experiences. Global peace will not be achieved by celebrating the distinctiveness of each nation, but by unifying all the workers of the world. And social harmony won't be achieved by each person narcissistically exploring their own inner depths, but rather by each person prioritizing their needs and experiences of others over their own desires. A liberal may reply that by exploring her own inner world, she develops her compassion and her understanding of others. But such reasoning would have cut little ice with Lenin or Mao. they would have explained that individual self-exploration is a bourgeois indulgent vice, and that when I try to get in touch with my inner self, I am all too likely to fall into one or other capitalist trap. My current political views, my likes and dislikes, and my hobbies and ambitions do not reflect my authentic self. Rather, they reflect my upbringing and social surrounding. They depend on my class and are shaped by my neighborhood and my school. Rich and poor alike are brainwashed from birth. The rich are taught to disregard the poor, while the poor are taught to disregard their true interests. No amount of self-reflection or psychotherapy will help, because the psychotherapists are also working for the capitalist system. Indeed, self-reflection is likely only to distance me even further from understanding the truth about myself, because it gives too much credit to personal decisions and too little credit to social conditions. If I'm rich, I'm likely to conclude that it is because I made wise choices. If I suffer from poverty, I must have made some mistakes. If I'm depressed, a liberal therapist is likely to blame my parents and to encourage me to set some new aims in life. If I suggest that perhaps I am depressed because I am being exploited by capitalists and because under the prevailing social system I have no chance of realizing my aims, the therapist may well say that I am projecting onto the social system my own inner difficulties and I am projecting onto the capitalists unresolved issues with my mother. According to socialism, instead of spending years talking about my mother, my emotions and my complexes, I should ask myself, who owns the means of production in my country? What are its main exports and imports? What's the connection between the ruling politicians and international banking? Only by understanding the surrounding socio-economic system and taking into account the experiences of all other people could I truly understand what I feel, and only by common action can we change the system. Yet what person can take into account the experiences of all human beings and weigh them one against the other in a fair way? That's why socialists discourage self-exploration and advocate the establishment of strong collective institutions, such as socialist parties and trade unions, that aim to decipher the world for us. Whereas in liberal politics the voter knows best, and in liberal economics the customer is always right, in socialist politics the party knows best, and in socialist economics the trade union is always right. Authority and meaning still come from human experience. Both the party and the trade union are composed of people and work to alleviate human misery, yet individuals must listen to the party and the trade union rather than to their personal feelings. That's it for today. I create a lot of content. I run a debating podcast, I write stories, I film videos with a drone, and I run many other projects too. If you'd like to stay informed of things I do, sign up to my private newsletter. It's free. Head to bit.ly/newslettersebastian, all attached and in lowercase. Thank you for listening.